Hi, this is Barry List of Informs, and you're listening to Informs Today. I'm at the Informs 2014 Analytics Conference in Boston with Evan Haber of IBM, who gave a workshop on two current phenomena that seem destined for one another. Analytics on the one hand, and the Facebooks, Twitters, and LinkedIns on the other. His talk's entitled Measuring and Predicting Personal Traits from Social Media. Evan, welcome.
Thank you very much.
It seems like the advent of the internet and social media has brought marketers a vastly increased ability to gather data and approach customers with greater insight. What kind of metrics are IBM and your clients now able to track?
Okay, so there's been a very large number of research efforts on understanding different things from social media. The area that the group that I'm part of has concentrated on is psycholinguistics and behavior. So understanding intrinsic traits of people from their linguistic and behavioral patterns on social media. Now,
the language that they use to communicate.
Yes. Psychologists have known about this for a long time, that the language that you use is influenced by your intrinsic personality traits. So regardless of what you're talking about, whether you're writing an email or talking about a restaurant that you just went to, or even sending a letter to your mother, your personality comes out in a subconscious way in the types of language that you use.
And just as an aside, I remember reading recently that the woman who wrote Harry Potter wrote under a pseudonym, and there were psycholinguists who were able to notice patterns and identify her and unmask her.
Absolutely. And this was sort of academically interesting in the psychology community, but it wasn't particularly useful until recently with the advent of social media, where suddenly, you know, in the past you had to ask somebody to write an essay or write a book to understand, to apply these techniques to them. But now we have millions and millions of people providing us with samples of their writing and putting it out in public, in many cases making it public to the world.
Can you give us examples of traits that can now be tracked?
So we have models that we're working with for a number of different types of traits. There's the big five personality traits, the standard measure of personality, personality being a relatively stable set of measures for how somebody engages with the world, how extroverted, how agreeable you are. We also have a set of metrics for fundamental human values, which are something else that comes out of psychology, a way of measuring what factors motivate you when you're making decisions about the future. We have models for needs, which describe what aspects of a product might resonate with a person, going across product categories. And even we're working on models for emotional state. So all of these are higher level things that we're able to extract from low level language features.
Now, we're becoming a little bit sensitive as a society to privacy. 25 years ago, the movies were all about Big Brother surveying, but we give up a lot of information now that we're on the internet. But what is your approach to privacy as you do this?
So I think, you know, privacy should be the very first thing that anybody thinks about when they take a look at this field. A large retailer 2 years ago got into a lot of negative publicity for predicting when women were pregnant from their purchase patterns. Mm. And certainly you don't want to go there. You want to make sure that people aren't going to feel violated or creeped out. And this type of research has the potential to really creep people out. On the other hand, if you are open about what you're doing and about why you're doing it and about the benefits to people, then we have evidence that people are willing to give some of their information in exchange for those benefits. IBM released a survey at the NRF conference back in January. They surveyed 30,000 people, and more than a third of them were willing to share social media credentials, social media presence online, in exchange for more personalized service. So I think that as time goes on, if these techniques are used well, then people will be more willing to share this information. If this is misused, then less people will be. So that's why I think privacy is extremely important and should be considered in each effort that people use these techniques for.
And as you say, in a situation like the one you described, where you're surveying, there was disclosure and voluntary participation.
Yes.
I mentioned Twitter earlier. What's the advantage of data generated by Twitter users?
So social media has many different platforms, and they all have trade-offs. Twitter is very nice as a research platform because the default mode for Twitter is that everything that's posted is available, visible to the world, unless somebody makes their profile private. And so, in addition, Twitter data can be purchased. You can buy large quantities of it. You can get smaller amounts of it directly from Twitter through their APIs. So Twitter data is very available from a research standpoint. It has fewer advantages when it comes to the quality of the data. The brevity of it seems to make it more idiosyncratic in terms of syntax and word choices. It's also not as pervasive as platforms such as Facebook. Facebook, on the other hand, while the data does seem to be richer, because of its opt-in characteristics, you have to have a relationship with somebody to look at their data. And
that applies to LinkedIn as well?
Yes. I'm less familiar with whether LinkedIn is able to sell their or is mm-hmm. willing to sell the data, but certainly you
I'm
have
sure
to
they'd
have
a
relationship. Yes. Twitter is very funny. They only sell their data through resellers, and I would think that they would be a big opportunity for them, but I think they would just wanted to outsource it, being a relatively small company.
Mm-hmm.
So there are lots of trade-offs in this. Twitter is easy to get at, a good research platform. Facebook is more pervasive, but you need to opt in. But, of course, many companies you see are doing that. They set up a presence on Facebook. If you like them, that gives them permission to look at your profile and oftentimes permission to look at your status postings. And I think as long as you're clear about why you want to do that, then that's a good approach.
And we touched a little bit earlier on modeling, but what kind of models have you been constructing to find insight from language and traits or
metrics? Yeah, so the modeling approach we take is fairly straightforward. There are lots and lots of psychological batteries, tests for understanding different aspects of human beings, and they're usually in the form of questionnaires. They'll ask you questions or ask you to look at different words and try and they ask you to self-reflect and look at and answer these questions or see which word is most relevant to you. And through that, they are able to evaluate these different traits. So you can take a standard test like that, and you can apply it to a large number of people, and then you can analyze samples of their writing. There are dictionary-based approaches. There's a standard dictionary called LUC, L-I-W-C, which comes out of the University of Texas, which a lot of people use, where there are some very compelling results showing that people use different categories of words in different circumstances, depending upon different intrinsic traits. Men tend to use articles more than women. Women tend to use pronouns more than men. Men tend to use plural, we, as a pronoun more than women. Mm-hmm. There are all kinds of interesting things that have been discovered about
and these are cultural?
Of course. I mean, and certainly
in the U.S. than you would in Japan.
Yes, and there are different language features, of course, in different, in French they have tu versus vous, which we don't have in English anymore.
Right, that's important.
Which is an
German
important
as well.
Yes.
And you give a great contrast between online customers at Target and Walmart as an example of the kinds of things that you can deduce. What kind of language patterns did you notice in that particular case?
So the point of comparing Target versus Walmart was to take two large retailers and just try and see, can we actually see any differences in the customer base, in their language usage? And while the differences are not that significant in terms, or well, let's see, they are significant in terms of p-values, they are not that large in terms of z-values. So we find that the followers of Target and the followers of Walmart on Twitter really do use language in measurably different ways. While I say the differences are not that large, they are large enough to build a model that can, say, predict who is a follower of Target versus Walmart correctly, say, 60% of the time, where random would be 50%. That's not great, but that's a huge step over not knowing anything about them. So not knowing anything about them and looking at the language and seeing those differences really means that these people are different in some way. I mean, of course, there's going to be a lot of overlap, but I think there really is a difference between the two populations, and you can detect that from how they use language. I mean, I think the examples are in my talk. The one thing that comes to mind, which was a little odd, was that people who follow Walmart swear. They use profanity measurably more often than people who follow Target. I'm not sure what that means, but it is a measurable difference.
Mm-hmm. And Walmart would have to probably study to see whether it's an expression of anger at them or whether it's a subculture or a strata that just tends to swear more.
Yes, and so this is, you know, I think finding these differences is sort of the first step. Understanding what it means and understanding what you can predict from that is the next important step.
So at some point in time, the goal would be to identify what you can sell to one target group as opposed to another, or pricing and the kinds of things that marketers
absolutely
examine.
So right now, I mean, a lot of this work was inspired by the needs of direct marketing. And marketing is really based on demographics and purchase history at this time. And in 2012, in the United States, companies spent $170 billion on direct marketing with an average conversion rate of 2%, meaning that they're spending $165 billion on sending the wrong message to the wrong people at the wrong time, annoying them, causing them to tune out, just basically wasting their money.
And if you can add one percentage point of $170 billion,
it's huge.
It's a large amount of money.
It's a huge opportunity both to improve business outcomes, but also to annoy people less. Because a lot more
which
of that
is
money,
important, actually, because
it makes the whole effort of marketing more effective.
Right, and just in terms of kindness to the person who watches late night TV and sees the same ad over and over again, we know that people can be annoyed if they're approached in the wrong way.
Right. So this comes out of direct marketing, and the thought is that demographics and purchase history is a very rough measure. And yes, you know, you can find your early adopter, you can find a lot of early adopters by looking for young people living in urban areas. But my father-in-law, who lives in Sunnyvale, California, and is more than 80 years old and can't go more than 3 months without buying a new cell phone because he loves electronic toys, he's an early adopter too, and you're not mm-hmm. going to find him with demographics.
Ah. That's where personality traits are something that you'd
yes,
like to be
able
to detect.
That's something that I would love to be able to find is, say, that the recipe for what makes an early adopter from these other intrinsic traits.
Let's turn to another one of your examples, and it's a public sector use. You looked at people who are customers, I suppose, of the Transportation Safety Administration, the TSA. And what does Twitter usage tell you, and can you actively reach out to social media users?
Yeah, so the example of this particular study was we wanted to see if people would answer questions via Twitter from a stranger. So we weren't anybody that they knew, and we wanted to say, if we find people tweeting about being in an airport, and it's pretty easy to search for airport codes and come up with a filter that will help you find those tweets. If we ask somebody who's in an airport, hey, tell us how long it took you to get through the security line, and possibly put the results up on this website to help other people plan ahead, what we found is that, really interestingly, people would actually answer our questions. So asking them about the TSA, we had a website called TSA Tracker where we put the results. More than 40% of the people would answer our question, which was fabulous, that people who didn't know us, who didn't know what we were doing, we weren't a recognized brand, were willing to reply to us asking a reasonable question about where they are. And furthermore, we were able to find through various types of modeling that behavioral and these intrinsic personality traits inferred through language usage were able to improve that prediction rate. So we were able to get response rates up above 70% if we used all this additional information.
And how can the TSA take what can the TSA learn from this research?
Well, I think for us, we were just using the TSA as an example. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what the TSA could learn, although perhaps they could do a better job of reaching out to people, and since they do seem to have a bad overall reputation, and they annoy a lot of people.
I like the examples that you use, and another one is something called Travelers Like Me. What is it?
So this was an experiment that is still ongoing, and the idea was to see how the traits that we're able to infer about people through their Twitter usage could inform whether or not they're likely to respond to an offer. So what we did is we created a recommendation system. So we looked on Twitter, we found people talking about restaurants and hotels in New York City. We collected a large body of these recommendations. And then when using Twitter searches, when we saw somebody who looked like they were going to be traveling to New York City, we sent them a tweet saying, hey, sign up for our free recommendation service. We'll send you recommendations based on travelers like you. And what we were most interested to see is, we tried different types of messages, and we wanted to say, can we find out who are the people most likely to respond? So this is very much like a marketing thing, except it is sort of circular in its use of social media, both for deriving the recommendations and helping link those recommendations to appropriate people. And once again, as with the TSA tracker, what we found is that people who had certain traits that we could measure and infer from their language usage on Twitter were much more likely to respond. Other people were much less likely to respond. One example is people who scored high in openness tended to respond with 50% higher level than the general population, and also low in negativism or neuroticism. The people who were that's a trait that measures how prone somebody is to negative emotions. And if you're likely to see negative outcomes, then you're not going to reply to some stranger out of the blue offering you something. Whereas if you're not likely to see negative outcomes, then, you know, somebody offers you something, you'll say, hey, why not? I'll give it a try.
So you're taking a look at the personality traits of people who are likely to respond
yes.
to an offer or to an inquiry of this sort.
Yeah, so we're actually... What we're doing is we're understanding what traits are likely to influence response rates, because this is an area which has had fairly limited studies. Psychologists have looked somewhat at how personality, say, influences buying patterns, but it hasn't had been studied on a large scale because it's simply hard to collect that data. It's hard to sit 10,000 people down and ask them to take a personality test and see what they buy. But here we can infer something from these language patterns, and then we can observe behavior, and we can say, okay, what correlations can we find? And I think that this is moving in the direction of better marketing, of being able to understand people better through their activities on social media, and from that being able to hopefully not bother them when they don't want to be bothered and send them offers that will be relevant to them.
So we only have time for one more question, and I would ask, what advances do you foresee in this area of social media and analyzing psychological traits?
Well, I think, yeah, so we started being inspired by the problems of direct marketing, but I think the applications of this are much broader. In the enterprise, it would be hugely valuable if people could understand each other better, if you could use techniques like this for team formation, for finding the right balance of people to put together for a particular project or to engage with a particular external customer.
So very different than direct marketing.
Yes. The goal is to help people understand each other better, and I think that would really help, because we live in a big, complicated world, and it's really hard to get to know people outside of your immediate circle. And social media provides an opportunity to do that. Social media analytics provides an opportunity to do that at large scale.
And I would guess it's not the subject today, but law enforcement would also be able to gain more, I can imagine, FBI profilers of...
I've certainly heard about projects like that, where they want to model... behaviors such as stealing from companies or being likely to leave a company and being able to spot those ahead of time or being able to detect spies or terrorists or that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I think that certainly at this point the models are still rough enough that you wouldn't want to use them for something as precise with as much of a downside as that if you misclassify somebody.
But team formation is a good term to go out with.
Yes, I think that's an area where, you know, if you could find the right balance of people to work together on a team, that could really help, because I've certainly seen teams with personality conflicts in the past.
And teams have become such an important feature in corporate life.
Absolutely.
That's all the time we have today. We've been talking with Eben Hamer of IBM. Eben, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome.
And thank you for listening to this issue of Informs Today, a podcast by the Institute for Operations Research in the Management Sciences. For more information about analytics, operations research, and this series of podcasts, visit us on the web at www.informs.org. Good day, and remember, keep on crunching.